At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to Broncos for Breakfast with Nick Kendall and Scott Kennedy.
Welcome in, welcome in. It is Wednesday morning, September 11th. Obviously a pretty important, reverent day for the United States. So I was in fourth grade when that happened. Scott's not to date myself, but I remember exactly where I was when I first heard it and the principal on the loud the speakers in school. So we didn't talk about it this morning, but obviously very horrifying moment in this country. And have you been out to the 9/11 memorial?
I have. Remember, I worked out of Manhattan for 2 years.
That's right.
So, and then the Sports Illustrated offices are right there. So okay. I'd walk by it a lot and just do a circle and just, you know, it's humbling for sure.
Oh, God.
And then they put the new like Freedom Tower or something like up. That's like right next to it. You're like, I don't want to be in that one.
No,
you know, I worked the SI offices were right there in the financial district right across the street from that. So yeah, I've been there a bunch.
Pretty, a very good memorial. Obviously mm-hmm. horrifying moment, but I had family that lived right down the street from the Twin Towers, and they had to use IDs for a month to get in and out of their apartments, and you know, dust on everything. It was a pretty crazy moment. So that was a long, obviously we're at 23-year anniversary now, but something that lives in infamy without a doubt. So obviously wanted to give a second to talk about that, given the weight and impact that's had on just world and U.S. history. But welcome in, everybody. Happy Wednesday. We're going to talk Broncos Steelers today, maybe a little bit more Seahawks beat down, not a beat down, but you know, they beat us pretty good. The score was closer than I think the play on the field indicates, but moving the page and excited to see what happens in a Russell Wilson-less game. Scott, what a letdown. I want to talk about a letdown, man. I was really hoping to go against Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I think as Jeremy says, who else is disappointed that Tomlin chickened out by sitting Russ? I don't know. I mean, he's so limited and their weapons are so limited that what's he bringing to you if he's like, consider him, okay, a really good pocket passer, so be it. Like, let's just say that's his strength. Whether you agree with it or not, I don't care. He's got no one to throw to. You got George Pickens, Pat Freiermuth, and he doesn't necessarily use the tight end. You know, that it's not a great matchup. You know, if I'm the Denver Broncos, I would rather have seen, and not, I'm just talking strategically, would have rather seen Russell Wilson. You know, when they played the Falcons last week, I would have rather have seen Russell Wilson than Justin Fields.
Yeah, I'm with you. One thing I will say is Pickens might be a little bit more explosive Cortland Sutton at this point. And as we
I think so too. He's just, I think that's a great comp. He's a little bit bigger, at least I feel like he's bigger. I haven't looked at the measurables, but he seems bigger to me. Cortland's bigger than you think he is. Mm-hmm. He's just more enigmatic. He's more explosive all over the place. Sutton's much more of a steady, I know what I'm going to get from Sutton, where Pickens, at any given time, he could pick up his ball and say, F this, I'm going home. You know, so he's a little bit more diva-ish than Sutton, mm-hmm. but I do think what Sutton does well, I think Pickens does a little bit better.
Yeah, and surprisingly, Sutton is decently bigger than Pickens mass-wise.
Is he really?
Yeah, Pickens, this is from the combine, so mm-hmm. I'm not sure exactly what he's at now, but Pickens only weighed 195 despite being 6'3".
Yeah, I think of length.
Sutton's wingspan, 85th percentile, Pickens' wingspan, 60th. They're both about the same height, but Sutton a lot more built in the chest, I guess.
Yeah, so Sutton's bigger, a lot bigger than you think he is, because I think of my mental picture is Pickens as being this big, lanky target, and Sutton just kind of being, you know, a good, pretty standard built wide receiver, and you just forget how big Cortland Sutton is.
Yeah, I just the twitchiness and the explosiveness, I think, is especially post-injury, a little bit better for Pickens down the field. But that's kind of what would the Russell Wilson offense look like if he was playing in this week? Sutton, I know that we have Surtain, and one of the benefits of having a Surtain, we saw it actually against the Seahawks, is they did let him trail DK Metcalf, which just doesn't really happen that much in today's NFL, but they did that. You do that with Pickens, and you might even shade a safety to Pickens, because I think if Russell Wilson's playing, the only way that I see them beating you is Pickens hitting the explosives from Russell Wilson, because Russell Wilson can still throw the deep ball. I mean, that's something that we'll miss. We might miss a little bit this season with Bo Nix, and that's not all Bo Nix, but Wilson has been one of the best 5'10 deep ball throwers in the NFL in the last decade. That was one of the things he still had. Now, much harder to do in today's schematic NFL. It's something we've talked about the last 2 years, Scott. Teams are doing everything they can to limit the explosive plays with how they're playing schemes. But with Wilson out, it's a different formula for the Broncos. Now it becomes a discipline on the front seven, edge setting, linebackers making tackles kind of game. And as we saw in the second half against the Seahawks, that's probably the weakness of this Broncos defense. Now we're going to see, it's just one game, one sample size, one set of opponents. Things are going to change a lot as the season goes on, but leaving that game for concerns on defense, it's the edge setters, it's the linebackers, it's the tackling. And when you add, I mean, obviously Geno Smith had that huge touchdown run. That was a little bit more scheme, I think, than people missing assignments, so to speak. But that was, we're going to find out a lot about the tackling and discipline in the run game against Justin Fields and the Steelers.
And Arthur Smith calling it. I expect to see it. And yeah, and Michael Ronquillo, thanks for coming in. Appreciate the love over there on Facebook. He says, good morning, Nick and Scott on Broncos for Breakfast. Bo leave. God bless Bo Nix and go Bo Broncos. I always feel like that's like go Inspector Gadget when I see that one. So yeah, with Arthur Smith, you know, watching him call a game the last several years with a mobile but limited passing quarterback, you can expect to see option reads where the quarterback is involved in the running game. You've got to be, and Justin Fields, we know that, but a lot of times Justin Fields' runs are off of passes. They're scrambles that he's able to, he's athletic enough to make problems. I think he'll expect, you mentioned it, edge setting, because you will see read options come out of this with his offense, Nick.
Yeah. I mean, you have to. How many sacks did the Falcons get last week, Scott?
Was two. It, I think Grady two? Jarrett had both of them.
Grady Jarrett. Man, I'd love a Grady Jarrett on here. unfortunately, our worst defender, according to PFF, the last week was Zach Allen. I don't know if you guys talked about that.
Oh, and your worst coverage guy was Pat Surtain, despite limiting DK Metcalf to
three catches.
To 3 catches and 29 yards. Carl, I talked about this with Carl yesterday. I'm like, okay, I don't watch the all 22 players at once. I just don't. So, you know, I'll have my impressions after the game and I'll think, okay, these are two or three players I really like. These are two or three players I thought really struggled. Let's see if that matches up with what I see on PFF. And it does, then I can trust what PFF is doing in some of the other places. They were so off. I'm like, okay, what did PFF say about Luke Wattenberg? Because I haven't watched the center play. I don't care. I don't care what PFF says about Luke Wattenberg from week one because our week one grades were so bad.
Yeah. I'm very confused coming out of that. Now, granted, the Seahawks had one of the highest pressure rates in football this week, but it's kind of hard. I mean, I know we want to turn the page to the Steelers here, but I think I saw a statistic. I don't have it exactly in front of me, that the Seahawks had the highest rate of unblocked rushers in week one. And what is that? That is rookie quarterback, first time center, Mike McDonald defense. So they did a lot of 3-2 on one side, dropping two guys on the other side and generating free rushers. So while the Broncos, I think Ben Baldwin puts out their true pass set grades, Denver's pass ranking, pass protection was ranked 20th this week. I think ESPN had their pass blocking, pass block win rate 20th as well. How do you have that, but also have the highest pressure given up? You have unblocked rushers.
The block rates from ESPN stat is garbage.
It's
garbage.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why they were on the Dalton Risner bandwagon for so long, because, oh, he's the number five run block win rate in the NFL. Guys, he can't run block. What are you watching? And you told me, oh, yeah, if he maintains his block, they consider that a win. He's pushed back. He's still in front of the guy, but he's been knocked back by the defensive tackle 5 yards into the backfield. Bro, that's a loss. Mm-hmm. That's an L.
Yeah. I do think,
but so Keith's rolling right into this. I'm gonna interrupt you real quick, Nick, because Keith is rolling right into this, and I want to serve it right back up to you, because I think you are answering some of his questions right now. He says, "Gents, the thing that worried me the most about Bo's ability to go through progressions, layered reads from Sean would help, in my opinion. thoughts. Roll that into the pressure rate.
I mean, obviously a lot of pressure. I feel like a lot of times he wasn't always manipulating the pocket like you want, you know, staying in phase with his mechanics, but that's a hard ask on your, for your rookie quarterback in a raucous environment where they're sending a lot of simulated pressures up front and getting free rushers. And the offensive line looked confused a bit. There were guys open. He missed throws. He was late a few times, but the bar isn't Peyton Manning or even, you know, three-year veteran quarterback right now. I mean, last year, CJ Stroud only put up 9 points in his first game as a rookie. So it's a long season. We can talk about Bo Nix and, you know, struggles in that like very narrow field of view, but the big perspective is, where's he going from here? So it was one that I want to see him be able to be a little bit more calm going through pressure. I want to see him be quicker with his decisions. I think some of it, I mean, he doesn't have the, I know it's been a point of contention in the chat and Broncos country in general. We're on the same page here, Scott, though. He doesn't have the FU arm where it's like,
I can make up for things with my arm. Now, accuracy is one thing, but I can't force, he can't force the ball through windows with his velocity.
Yeah, he can't be late with his decisions, especially if you're throwing the ball beyond 10 yards with two deep safeties watching. And also, you can't be, I don't think he has the overall raw arm to push the ball with poor lower body mechanics. You know, there's 10, 14 quarterbacks in the league who can do that, some better than others. Obviously, Anthony Richardson, we saw it this week. I don't know. I mean, that throw, Scott, I still can't get over that.
That's different.
He's an alien. So those are things that you want to see.
Who would you rather have throw if I've got a guy on a drag route on second and 11? Who would you rather have throw it with a clean pocket, Anthony Richardson or Bo Nix?
Bo Nix, right?
Bo Nix. So that's just, you know, there's you know, as we're talking about layers here, Keith, there's layers to this game. You know, it's not a javelin throw contest. It is playing quarterback, and there's more than one ways to skin a cat, because I think after all that, Anthony Richardson was 9 for 19 with a loss. Yeah. So, you know, that's part of it. But Keith, we talked about this, you know, some of the things, my concerns on Monday, not one of them was Bo Nix. You know, mine was in last night on Building the Broncos with Carl on our stock up, stock down. One of my stock downs, Nick, was Sean Payton and the play calling. I don't think he really gave Bo Nix a great chance, and I'm not sure. And for me, what it did, Sean Payton said to me, I don't trust my receivers to get downfield, and I don't trust my quarterback to hit them downfield. Mm-hmm. So everything was underneath. It made it too easy for the Seattle defense.
Yeah, and as Sean Payton said many times, they put their quarterback in a bad situation a lot in that game because of early down inefficiency. And right now, just with where Bo Nix is at, with the lack of obvious go-to weaponry, if you're 3rd and 8 plus consistently, ball might be in harm's way. So you're playing that game of, are we throwing it underneath? Are we running it? Are we going to put it the, again, ball in harm's way? It's tough. So they need to be better on early downs, especially run game. And they were good in the first half, but they need to figure out different ways to get the run game going, some easy completions, just to set yourself up better on third down. Because we didn't see it in preseason, Scott. We didn't see one true drop back pass attempt from Bo Nix. So what do I mean by that? Where he's under center, it's 3-step drop, 5-step drop without a run design action off of it. The true drop back pass game, which was a question for Nix coming out, because he didn't have to do that a lot at Oregon, didn't have to do that a lot at Auburn. But in the NFL, at some point, rubber meets the road. You have to be able to execute a drop back pass game. And it's hard to do, or it's easy to kind of not totally rely on that if it's 3rd and 3. If it's 3rd and 2, you can do different things to protect your quarterback there. They didn't do enough. And that's what Sean Payton, I think, has been saying in these the press and the post-game conference, in Monday's conference as well. Just, you know, protecting the quarterback that way. Again, did Nix play well? No, he didn't have a great game. But I'm not really freaking out about it. You know, my opinion is not any higher or lower on him than it was entering preseason. You know, we got to let 8 games go before we even really start to understand, where is this going? What are we seeing here?
No, I said we expect Bo Nix to struggle, to have bad numbers in week 1. If he doesn't, that will mean more to me than if he does. he's expected to. He's a rookie. You know, we said one out of six first round quarterbacks had decent weeks in week one. One out of six. The others were either non-existent, non-applicable, or poor. Talking about the third and longs, Sean Payton is stubborn. They're all stubborn play callers. But if he's going to be stubborn, I'd rather see him stubborn and trying to force the run. Okay. Javonte Williams did not get the ball enough. If it's second and nine, fine. Run it again. See if I can get third and seven that way and just keep bouncing into it. Because what he got stubborn on was sideways throws. I read one of your articles on it, or maybe it was Eric Trickles. Eric was pretty harsh on Sean Payton. I loved it. Just the underneath throwing, that's where he was stubborn. Man, we know the short passing game is going to be an extension of the running game, but I need to run the ball too, and I need to get the ball downfield if that's going to work at all. He was stubborn with the sideways passes over and over and over again. Run the ball. I'd rather see third and seven with two Javonte Williams off tackles or up the middle right behind my $30 million of right tackle and right guard than I would watching Devon Vele catching the ball 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage. I'd rather see that. And then let's see what happens.
Yep. And obviously there was kind of an issue there for the Broncos establishing the run. They ran the ball well, decently early. Granted, not enough to punch it in, going 1-for-4 in the red zone there until that last drive. They are 0-for-3 until that last drive. But something I want to see, I'm just accepting the fact this season, Scott, that it's not going to be a down the field pass game. I think it's there's multiple factors there, from Bo Nix himself and the drop back pass game kind of hopefully evolving here, but also the weaponry. We've talked about it here. Denver probably bottom five in the pass catcher department in the NFL this season. But they still have to run the ball. And how am I doing that? I know it's always risky to do this, but we saw Bo Nix reach, what was it, the fastest non-wide receiver running back time in the league this week in terms of miles per hour on the GPS. The fastest guy out there. I want to see the quarterback run game be designed a little bit. Now, I know that's with a quarterback, that's always a little bit risky to do because you are risking potentially more serious hits and whatnot. But
I've got three quarterbacks. I love this quarterback room.
Right? Yeah. I
keep saying how much I love this wide receiver in this quarterback room. I got three quarterbacks.
I still don't think you want to put your rookie out there to risk him for that too much. But if teams are going to be crowding and pinning their ears back at the safety and linebacker spot, at least have a little bit of deception in the backfield and make them account for that plus one in the quarterback. It doesn't have to be, 15 quarterback keepers, but 5 to 10 designed runs. And I think this last week, Scott, we might've had the highest EPA gained from quarterback scrambles / runs that we've had in 5-6 years. There's something to be said about the running.
Why is that?
It's because teams are playing so much nickel defense and vacating the box. And I think a lot of young quarterbacks are trying to get out there and make some plays. Obviously there's more mobility,
more mobile quarterbacks for sure. But you talk about it at the top about trying to limit explosive plays. How do I limit explosive plays?
Put a canopy on the defense.
Make sure nobody gets behind me. How do I make sure nobody gets behind me? I keep backing up. If I keep backing up, it opens up the underneath. The running game, whether it's from the quarterback or the running backs, is the counter to that. The problem I have with this, Nick, is one negative play and you're screwed. And that's what defensive coordinators are counting on. And one negative play also includes these flag happy freaking officials.
Yeah.
Can I run 10 plays without the laundry coming out? Probably not.
Probably not.
Probably not. Yeah. So if we're going to see, what could you do to help the offenses more than anything? Stick the flags in your pockets for stuff that really doesn't affect the play.
Yeah, I mean, I know we keep talking about all these rules changing to help the offense more than the defense, but this was one of the worst weeks of offensive football coming off of one of the worst years of offensive football we've seen in a decade. So we'll see. I mean, defense is round, and it's something, Scott, you've talked about a lot. We're almost reaching the point where the run game is catching up with the pass game in terms of the efficiency. Now, granted, because passes are more likely to result in explosives and because of the type of penalties associated with the pass game versus the run game, You're going to see more likely to see hold and run game than pass game. You're more likely to see pass interference on the defense in the pass game than the run game. So it's still thumb weighted on the pass game to create plays versus the run game, but we're closer than we've been in a long time. And Denver's going to need to run the ball better. I mean, it's got to be the most expensive offensive line in football. If it's not, obviously top five.
Yeah. They've changed with some of the restructures and stuff. That if you look at, I don't know if I can sort it by average. I'll check it out. But it was top five.
You need to play like a top five unit then. And granted, this is part of the issue of paying for a top offensive line from free agency versus draft development and re-sign, right? We always talk about, you're going to be paying A prices for B players. But this was a tough defense. And unfortunately, it's not going to be more exotic this week, but it's going to be tougher personnel wise. Cause on paper, this is going to be either the best, second best or third best defense I believe the Broncos are going to play this season. So we got Dale coming in here, $25. Thank you so much, Dale, supporting us on these Wednesday morning shows, keeping the lights on. My internet's been doing great now, so God bless. It looks like it's not dropping. So we had some issues this morning with the Falcons on my end. But he says, morning, gents. I'm not concerned about Bo Nix at this point. I think he held up well considering the defense. I'm more concerned about the 3.2 yards per carry from the backs. That did not help Bo at all. Loved Riley Moss's debut. Everything, this reason football is so great, Dale, and just everybody, I'm not singling you out, Dale, is that it's so hard to isolate variables in football. It's a chaos sport, small sample size, and there's so many variables in that system at the same time. So the 3.2 yards per carry, what went wrong there? Well, I think the wide receivers and the tight ends didn't block very well. Looked like there were some cleat issues early on. The Seahawks were triggering downhill, especially after, you know, Denver wasn't really testing them deep. So it's all connected. I mean, God, not to everyone drink, Nick connecting it back to Iowa. Iowa wants to run the football. Well, guess what? If you can't throw the ball beyond 10 yards and you don't have anybody on the perimeter who scares anybody, teams are going to load the box and they're going to trigger downhill and call run blitzes. Granted, we didn't see many run blitzes this week that I saw, but they're going to call run blitzes to take away the run, to say, we don't think you can beat us deep. Try us. And that's something that when you throw, what was it, 2 for 11 on passes 8 yards beyond the line of scrimmage? Now, granted, not all Bo Nix drops out there, but some late fires and everything. It's going to be harder to run the ball if they're not respecting your pass game. So everything is in this positive feedback loop where if one thing is bad, the defense is going to counter and play into that strength and take away what you're good at. So I know it's tough. Pass game has to be better. Is that a weapons problem? Is that a Bo Nix problem? Is that a Sean Payton trying to figure out what's working problem? Luckily, we have 16 more games to go.
It's a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
You know, for sure. And as far as the average per, Denver comes out fourth in the NFL. They're actually 13th on salary cap hits this year because they restructured some guys. Miners' contract hasn't kicked in yet, and they knocked Powers and McGlinchey's in half with some restructures on those. So there actually isn't that good. But Dale, I understand the 3.2. Yeah, that's part of it. But it's not awful. Again, 3.2 two times in a row, and I'm looking at third and four, third and three. I can live with that. Now, you probably won't keep getting 3.2 if you're running on first and second down every time. But my sideways passing, what was my yards per completion? What was my yards per attempt for Bo Nix? It might not have even been 3.2. And the risk factor is 10x what it is turning around and handing it to Javonte Williams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not great. We do have air yards per attempt this week. And let me see, where are we at here with Bo Nix? It was not great. 28th in the NFL, tied for 28th. Was ahead of both Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams, though. So, I mean, hey, there you go. But 2.4 air yards per attempt. So something to monitor. We're going to see how it changes. That was a tough environment, a very tough scheme. So many free rushers in this game. Unfortunately, this is a very talented defensive front and defense in general that has star pieces across the defense for the Steelers. And when you have so many star pieces, you can supplement with veterans and role players, something that, you know, some teams will go out there and they sign these role players without the stars to build around, and it doesn't look good then. But the Steelers have three star players. I mean, let's be honest, guys who could honestly have Hall of Fame conversations at the end, I think. Definitely all pro, Pro Bowl, but you have TJ Watt, one of the three best edge rushers in football. Cameron Hayward, holy cow, Scott, 35 years old and playing like that. What the absolute heck. He was unbelievable in that. I'm sorry, it's just, he's so good.
No, he's been around so long that I use that, like, whenever I get on the, no, the Julio Jones trade wasn't good. Way back in the day, that's how long Cam Hayward's been around. The Falcons could have had either Cam Hayward or Cam Jordan based on the picks that they made, plus mm-hmm. four other picks.
Yeah.
Those guys would have helped that team more. That's how long Cam's been around. Cam went to Peachtree Ridge High School, 20 minutes from my house. When it's a lot of these guys who, a lot of the pros settle in this area. It probably happens a lot in Denver too, but there's a lot of ex-pros and his dad, Craig, may he rest in peace, did play down here for a little bit. And a lot of these guys stick around and have their kids come out of the state of Georgia. And Cam was one of those guys. And he went up to Ohio State. He was from the state of Georgia.
Yeah. Well, he was amazing. I mean, TJ Watt had, do you see what TJ Watt's PFF grade was, Scott? It was like 95.
It was like 94.
Actually, 95.3. I had it.
And it probably was higher if he, you know, that strip sack would have counted that.
Yeah.
Probably was a strip sack.
Unbelievable. And the other superstar player on that Steelers team, of course, is Fitzpatrick. So they mean they're good.
Yeah, Patrick Queen ain't bad either.
And I was going to say their linebacker. I mean, you have Keanu Benton, who you knew how
Alex
much.
Alex Highsmith ain't bad either.
No, we loved Keanu Benton coming out. He was great. You mentioned Highsmith as well. And then there are two linebackers. I mean, they used Nick Herbig a lot, from Wisconsin up there in some different blitz looks. They got Joey Porter Jr. had a good season last season. And their linebacker, I mean, Broncos country is probably going to come out of this game with linebacker envy, Scott, because now while I think, especially with Queen, sometimes his hips can go the wrong way and get a little bit fooled, a little bit overzealous. But you pair Patrick Queen with Peyton Wilson, who he's had so many injuries at NC State, but we might have the defensive rookie of the year, the top two in these first 2 weeks for the Broncos. Cause we had Byron Murphy last week, who had just so many pressures and good run stops. I mean, for being as small as he was, taking on double teams, he has that weird move where he can drop to his knees and anchor and then get back up. I mean, he's so flexible and athletic. It's crazy. But then you have Peyton Wilson this week, who was awesome, I thought, in that game versus the Falcons as well. So it's going to be a tough task for the Broncos. Now, I don't think you're going to get as many exotics in the pressure packages this week. You're going to be home as well, so hopefully you can have a little bit better communication at the line of scrimmage. If you need to get out of things, check to a run look. But this is definitely one of the top three defenses on paper you're going to play this season. Talent wise. So,
well, and they're just so dangerous up front. You know, we talk about the difference between, it's like, where are they weak? Corner. Okay. Well, if I was worried, I'm not worried about cornerback at all for the Denver Broncos this week. You know why? The wide receivers here. Give me a guess on wide receivers production after George Pickens for the Pittsburgh Steelers against the Atlanta Falcons.
I have nothing.
Two catches, 9 yards on 4 targets.
Yeah.
The wide receivers, they're just not there. Van Jefferson's your number two, then you're horrendous at the wide receiver position. Jeremy comes in, he says, can you compare the Broncos O-line to Atlanta's? Will Pittsburgh have the same success? So this is a kind of a multi-layered question. Man for man, Atlanta's offensive line, I think, is better than the Denver Broncos. I think Jake Matthews is better than Garrett Bowles. I think Matthew Bergeron and Ben Powers is kind of a wash. Powers should be better. I just don't think he is. I just don't think he's been that great. Yeah. And Matthew's been okay as a second-year guy. Yeah. I think Drew Dahlman is better right now at center. As good as Quinn Meinerz is, Chris Lindstrom's arguably the best offensive lineman in football. He was the highest-graded PFF guy in football 2 years ago. So he's just farther ahead. You know, he's a couple years older. And then right tackle, Mike McGlinchey and Caleb McGarry are damn near the same guy.
Yeah.
They are damn near the same guy. That said, the Falcons scheme was so predictable. And I don't mean like everybody always complains, we're so predictable. I mean, literally, they ran either a pistol or a shotgun in all but one of their snaps. If they were in the shotgun, they passed it every time. If they were in the pistol, they ran it 90% of the time, and they did not have a single play action. the Broncos' offensive line will perform better than the Falcons' offensive line did because the scheming, play calling, and predictability was off the charts against the Steelers.
And to add to that too, Bo Nix's mobility and athleticism, something that, again, I think I really did underrate coming out of Oregon because he just didn't have to use it so much at Oregon. Now, granted, sometimes that leads to poor mechanics and some things and decision-making, but the athleticism and the frame package, I mean, we saw it.
I didn't because when he was at Auburn, his third year at Auburn, Mike Bobo was the offensive coordinator, and they gave up on throwing the ball. They just gave up on it. Like, okay, he can't throw, or we can't throw with him. They just gave up on him. The entire offense ended up being basically going back to Nick Marshall for Gus Malzahn and Auburn, who was drafted as a defensive back. That's how they ended up devolving into. So we knew, I knew Bo Nix is a hell of an athlete.
And that's something that I think you can utilize. Now, granted, you always put the ball in a little bit of harm's way there, or the quarterback in harm's way there, if you're using the quarterback run. But the other point to that, Scott, was Kirk Cousins looked unbelievably immobile. I mean, we spent the whole episode this morning about, I mean, what's going on? His foot looks weird. They're calling plays like he's, you know, Peyton Manning playing on one leg in 2015. That's what it looked like. I mean, trying to protect him. They can't, do they not trust his mobility enough to get to the drop back from under center? I mean, God, that's unbelievable.
We just spent 40 minutes talking about how bad the Atlanta Falcons scheme and how concerning that was over on my channel, youtube.com/Scott Kenny. But Jeremy, my point is, I think the Falcons man for man, their offensive line is better. I think the Broncos offensive line will do a better job against the Pittsburgh Steelers. I still think they're outmanned though. And that's, I'll say that for just about anybody. The Steelers front seven is just good. I mean, it's as good as you're going to face this year.
Yeah. The only one that I think will come close is probably the Browns. When they come to, I think they come to town. I don't know if Denver's going to Cleveland, but, and I mean, last season, the Chiefs defense was so good. I think you at least have to toss them in there as well. George Karlaftis, Trent McDuffie, obviously Chris Jones is maybe only the second best defensive tackle in football. Did you see what Dexter Lawrence did this week? Scott, did I send you any of the data there for, I mean, the poor Dexter Lawrence, because the Giants are so bad, but he had something like a 70% pass rush win rate from the interior as a nose tackle. And the next highest interior defensive lineman was like 30.
Did he just get paid or see a free agent coming?
I'm not sure, but Dexter Lawrence might be the best defensive tackle in football right now. Somebody needs to save him because my God, the Giants are terrible, but I digress. This is a really tough defense for the Broncos. And I think that we're going to be, for those of you going to the meet and greet and everything, I hope you like Big Ten West football, because I think this is going to be a grueling ball on the ground. Not a lot of explosive plays. Punt fest in this game. I think first one to reach 18 points ends up winning, because I just don't see either team being able to manufacture enough consistent offense in the drop back pass game to really control this game. I think it's going to be a battle of field position and execution. I mean, this is one of those win in the margins games. Who's doing better on first and second down to set up third down? Who's flipping the field on punts, you know, rather than kicking it into the end zone for a touchback, you're pinning it on the five. I mean, those are the things I think in this game. Again, I've been brainwashed in the battlefields that have been the Big Ten West, but that's how these two teams look to me. We talked a lot about the Broncos offense versus the Steelers defense. For me, the Broncos defense, we talked about a little bit at the start of the show, I think they're going to have to tackle better in this game if they're going to win this overall. The Steelers have invested heavily in the offensive line. Hasn't really, that's something you pay, and then down the line, hopefully you're getting better results. I think Zach Frazier looks awesome for them at center, Scott, their rookie from West Virginia. They have two really good backs. Now you have Justin Fields as well. Right. Broncos really struggled in tackling last week. I mean, I know everybody loves the raw tackle numbers, but Alex Singleton, 4 missed tackles against the Seahawks. 4? That's really bad. Nick Benito had 2, despite being in a rotational position and being more of a pass situation guy, to still have 2 missed tackles.
There's 10% of your offense right there, because you can probably come up with at least 30 extra yards that you got off those 6 missed tackles.
Yep.
If you average 300 yards, you just got 30. 10% of your offense was missed tackles just from those two guys. It adds up.
You also had 2 missed tackles from Riley Moss. Now, granted, Should he have had the opportunity to have 14 tackles in the open field? Probably not, right? That's a concern as well. But this is one where Denver's, they're going to have to tackle better in this game. When you have Fields and those running backs, you're going to have to be able to take away the run and tackle in the open field, because Justin Fields, for as inconsistent as he can be in the dropback pass game, a little bit volatile, he's still an unbelievable athlete in the open field, and he can get an explosive for you. They're going to try to spread you out horizontally with the run game and then try to get you over the top. So the big keys on defense, again, you cannot have as many missed tackles as the Broncos did last week. Just it's unacceptable. How many did we have here overall? 14 missed tackles, says Pro Football Focus from the Broncos. 14.
And some of that is you're not like, I got a little frustrated hearing the, oh man, the Seattle Seahawks are tackling. Well, they're in the hip pockets of the guys when they get the ball. That's a pretty easy tackle. Now, when I've got some separation, you give a professional running back 2 yards of space or a receiver 2 yards of space, and I have to close on him, you're going to have more missed tackles. That's just, I don't care how good a tackling team you are. There was no space from the Broncos offense to the wide receiver for the Seattle defense, and you're getting space for the Seattle offense against the Broncos defense. You're getting guys in space. You're going to have more missed tackles. Jeremy comes in. He says, we need to spy Fields. That's the Steelers' only offensive weapon. And I was thinking about this too. How would I try and defend Seattle? And I'm like, all right, I would put Surtain on Pickens and I'd double him anyway. Okay. Well, if I've got Surtain, I don't need to double him. I don't care. I can stop the rest of that offense with 9 guys. I cannot let George Pickens beat me downfield. And then again, I go with this one too, with Jeremy Sean. He says, we need to spy Fields. And then I put a safety as a spy on Fields because a linebacker can't catch him. You don't, there aren't hardly any linebackers in football that are going to catch Justin Fields in the open field. Laterally. So then I have a safety cheating down on Fields.
Typically, Scott, I am with you on a lot of this. And a lot of times I'm very conservative with my approach on defense because I'm very much in the, it's part of, again, it's some of the Iowa mold, some of it seeing what Vic Fangio is doing. I don't think a team can execute 8 to 12 plays in a row without messing up and putting themselves in a bad situation. But that said, what do we know about Justin Fields? I mean, outside of Russell Wilson last season, nobody was putting themselves in worse situations offensively.
And then in the first game, they win the turnover battle 3-0.
Yes.
What are the odds of that happening again?
I'm going to say that,
Nick, is you won the turnover battle in the first half against the Seahawks 4-0.
Yeah.
Or thereabouts. And still couldn't score. So
offensive ineptitude on that one. But that's... For me, what I'm thinking here, Scott, is I'm with you. I'm going to probably play cover. It's got to be zone, right? Because you can't have your back to the quarterback with Justin Fields. I feel like he'll just take off then. There'll be space. So it's probably going to have to be some level of zone coverage, probably some cover 3 kind of looks or match zone where you kind of have man on one side, zone on the other going on. But I'm playing a lot of single high safety with the safety shaded towards where George Pickens is going. Right. Like you mentioned, that's your effective doubling. People, for those at home, doubling doesn't mean you're lining up 2 guys there on the line. That's not really.
We're not punting. We're not marking the gunners. Real quick on Zach Powers. Don't sleep on Roman Wilson. Roman Wilson didn't play last week and he's still questionable for this week.
Yeah.
So he's been injured. You might not see him. And if you do, how effective is he going to be coming off an injury in his very first game? But we'll see. We love Roman Wilson. Both of us do, but he might not play. He didn't play against Atlanta last week.
But as far as the defensive scheme, what I'm looking for, Scott, here, and it's not typically my style, but I have so little faith in the Broncos offense being able to manufacture points on long fields and drives consistently right now that I think you need to probably steal a possession here and there. And I know they did this week. They didn't execute against the Seahawks, but I think you're still going to be playing zone coverage, shading that safety towards where George Pickens is just to eliminate the deep ball. And then I'm sending 5 or 6 out there and blitzing Justin Fields. Now, I know there's a little bit of playing fire there because if he escapes, you know, you have those guys behind him and a lot of open field in front of him. But I think that you're still going to, I would still push the envelope there, because I think either he's going to throw something up stupid, or he's going to fumble the football, something he did a lot, or you're going to get a big sack. Cause a lot of times he's just, you're doing too much, man, right? Just like go forward, get north and south. Like the play is dead. I understand you're trying to create some explosives here and there, which is so important in today's NFL, but a 8-yard sack kills a drive. So I think I'm going to be actually blitzing a lot, especially on first and second down, which are contain run blitzes, so to speak. And then hopefully creating some explosives, some splash plays on the defensive side of the ball, whether it be turnover sacks and hitting that football. This needs to be a strip sack game. We need to steal a possession. And I know Denver did it last week. It's still a formula to win. I know they didn't score off the safeties. I know they didn't score off that Alex Singleton pick early, which they, I mean, from touchdowns, they didn't score touchdowns, but I think that's a formula here in this game. And I think you can cheat a little bit, because I'm not really scared about Justin Fields in the dropback game. And I'm not really scared of the weapons outside of George Pickens down the field.
Yeah. And then, yeah, again, and then the running game. So you didn't actually disagree with me, even though you said you did, because you can still do all of those things while shading guys over to George Pickens and allocating a guy to Justin Fields. You just might blitz him.
You just might blitz him instead of playing a spy.
Yes. But I've got a guy on Justin Fields.
Something else, I think that you have to do well on first and second down to get there. I'm not going to do as many games up front with twists and stunts, because that can leave some vacating holes. And when you got Najee Harris or Justin Fields, who is essentially another running back there, the twists and stunts are only going to be good on second and long, third and long. So it's going to be a lot more, where's the pressure coming from versus games turning around up front. So we'll see. I thought Vance Joseph did pretty well last week. I think it was more of a misexecution error, that big touchdown to Charbonnet. What's going on there? I don't know. You had the Geno Smith run. You had missed tackles left and right. I don't think that's a Vance Joseph issue. That's a players on the field making plays. So hopefully we'll be out there and get some explosives, and hopefully Denver can execute on those turnovers that they failed to do this week. Because, I mean, the defense, I mean, really, Scott, that might have been the best two quarters of play we get from the defense and special teams combined all season from the Broncos. I mean, the two safeties, the punt at the one, all of it was great.
Couple of sacks. Offense
flatlined. Yeah.
Yep. Couple of sacks, plenty of turnovers, 4 points, penalties. Seattle looked just awful in the first half. And part of that was the pressure that Denver was putting on them, but Seattle got it together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's easier to do that at home. And it's easier to do that when the defense bails you out and doesn't let those turn into more points, because the Broncos could have been up 20 in the first half.
Yep. Yeah. We will, we'll see what happens with this game. It's time to get on out of here, Scott. So I do want your prediction of this game. I think early in the season, we might have predicted a win here with Denver at home, but that was with Russell Wilson. I think the formula for defense is easier with Russell Wilson. Just don't let George Pickens beat you deep. And guess what? I think we'll be okay there. The added factor of the run game with Justin Fields, I think it's a little bit more volatile, but with Denver's questions at edge setting, I mean, Browning and Benito were bad at setting the edge. Barton/Singleton missed tackles left and right. I think it's a little harder here. And also the Steelers defense looked better than I thought they were going to look. So I think
Steelers, I like the under on this. I think the over under on this is 36 points. And I've had 16-13 in my head for a while, Steelers. I think it's going to be low scoring. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be ugly. And I think Denver needs to win the turnover battle and force Justin Fields to lose this game. You know, it's kind of, thing is, remember what happened the last time they tried to do that with Justin Fields? Hey, we're going to make him a pocket passer. Didn't he have like 400 yards and 4 touchdowns in that game? He doesn't have the weapons to do that. He just doesn't have the wide receivers to have a game like that again. But I like 16-13 Steelers, and I expect it to be close going down to the wire.
Yeah, I'm going to go 17-14 Steelers on that one. I think Denver will find the end zone late. I think it's going to be, unfortunately, it's going to be kind of a tough game. Just, I think, tough to watch. I'm not expecting it to look, again, Big Ten West football. It's going to be Wisconsin versus Minnesota, you know, what do they call it? 2 yards and a pile of dust kind of stuff
I've started changing that to a cloud of rubber pellets, because that's what they always used to call it down here in the South, was 3 yards and a cloud of dust. Now it's 3 yards and a cloud of rubber pellets.
So, I mean, key factor for me, can Denver establish the ground game enough where they have good opportunities on third down and they're protecting the quarterback? Because if it's third and long and you are isolating Mike McGlinchey against TJ Watt and the interior offensive line versus Hayward and everything they were doing out there, I can't see it being a good formula. So running the ball effectively is something that Peyton preached when he first came to Denver, taking Russell Wilson off the high dive, right? Didn't see that last week. Hopefully we see it this week. And it's definitely a point of emphasis. And while Denver's offensive line isn't the worst in the world, I mean, some people kind of have this idea that they're absolutely terrible. You're not getting, last week, you were not getting the return on investment as well. So a little bit of a nuance to that one still, but they have to be able to run the football this week. So we got Brian Dunn coming in 1999. And yeah, the MHH guys have not seen a loss yet. So maybe this will be a win. We'll see. Scott and I predicting a loss. I am. And Jeremy says he feels better with us both predicting a loss here. Well, good. That's the anti-curse. Scott and I will both be there also. So if you guys are going to make it out to the game, hit us up on Twitter. I don't have the details just yet, where exactly we're going to be, but should be a lot of fun. And we'll see you guys this Sunday. Thank you, Brian, for the support as well. And everybody coming in today with the support. Michael Ronquillo, Keith Brugman, Dale a couple times as well. Also loved his comment about Riley Moss. Did we get Dale's second?
We missed Dale's second one.
Yeah.
I apologize. I missed the second one.
Let's do it. He says, I think we would all love if Lockett not made that unbelievable one-handed catch on Moss, who had him blanketed on that third down. Bo gets the ball back just after driving the ball down to prevent D. Yeah, that would have been fantastic to see Denver get a chance there. Baron Browning also, I mean, Moss has kind of gotten a lot of heat for that, but Browning jumped off sides, right? That was to really change the type of plays that the Seahawks could run there. Otherwise, that, you know, quick out across the line isn't working, or the drag, whatever it was. So multiple
and if defensive backs there could catch, they'd be wide receivers.
Yeah. And also, as we always say in here, perfect pass and perfect route beats perfect coverage every time. Moss couldn't have played that much better. It's just, you know, dart throw there, and Lockett, who's been one of the most underrated receivers in football in his career in the NFL, came down with it. So we'll see. I wasn't here for stock up, stock down last night. I hope you guys had stock up for Riley Moss, because Denver maybe has an option at cornerback too going forward. Because this team, we talk about the Yahtzee role, right? If you can find young rookie cost control guys to fill some of these spots going forward, that's great. Obviously, just one game, just like with Bo Nix, we're not going to make too much of this. Just one game for Moss. He could absolutely stink still the next 16, and then we're still looking for cornerback. But positive returns, I think, overall from Moss and cornerback too in that first game.
Dale, did you change your name again? Is this the D-Dub Dale? Are we going to see you at the meet and greet, I hope? Coming in big baller like D-Dub, the same initials. So it certainly makes sense. So appreciate you. Sorry we missed that second super chat. We'll make it up to you and hope to see you on Sunday. It's coming. Yeah. It's here. It's a meet and greet. It's meet and greet week. I can't wait.
I'm excited. It'll be a lot of fun. I'm hoping that it's not going to be 90 degrees plus for the game. I haven't checked the weather. My dad told me it was going to probably be hot. So I'm a little bit concerned with that, because the Pacific Northwest has made me really delicate with the heat. Yeah, I'm going to wilt a little bit. So somebody
we
bring
have
the
very
fan.
Different skin tones, Nick.
I mean, I could change the light color here. I'm a mossback these days. Pacific Northwest has made me soft. But I'm excited for the game. It'll be a lot of fun. And hopefully we see a win. The only Broncos game I've ever seen win live, other than a preseason game back in 1999, was
2-0. Because I went to London, they beat the Jags, and then I was at the meet and greet 2 years ago, and they beat the 49ers.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. Yeah, keep Nick away from the game. Sorry, guys, my dad and I will be there, and hopefully gonna be good. And yeah, I am excited. I don't know if that's sarcastic or not, but it's gonna be a lot of fun. I'm just excited to get to Denver as well, and hopefully my little guy's been dealing with a little bit of a stomach viral thing, so hopefully it's better by then as well, because I don't want to fly with a baby who's having a lot of dirty diapers, but we're going to find out.
It'll be hotter in Denver than in Atlanta.
Ugh. It's a dry heat though, Scott. It's a dry heat. Well, I appreciate everyone.
Yeah, dry heat will freaking torch you too and peel off layers of skin in a heartbeat.
Hydrate. I'm going to need to bring some lotion. Appreciate everyone for the Steelers. Make sure you're following Scott and I at Scout Kennedy and at Nick Kendall MHH. Also follow us at Mile High Huddle. If you haven't done so yet, we're at facebook.com/Mile High Huddle and facebook.com/Mile High Huddle Pod. If you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe, like, and share over on YouTube. Again, thank you so much to the the Star Givers today. We will see you guys this week. We'll see you again next Monday as well. At least I will. I don't know what's going on with Scott, but appreciate all you guys. Have a great one. Continue to use kindness and compassion. Go Broncos.
Head on over to milehighhuddle.com for all things Broncos. Good morning, Broncos country.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.